Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode 172. I've made my way back from Melbourne to Brisbane via Coolangatta because I'd heard much ado about a bar that has actually been open for a year, and a bit remiss of me, I've just made it here today. Turns out it's not even open today, but I have found the chef that I was looking for. His name is Nick Stanton. I'd heard a lot about what's going on in this bar, food-wise and also the natural wine list. But then I dug a little deeper and found out that Nick is from this area, and I wanted to talk to him today about what it was like growing up in the food bowl that is the Tweed region. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Kylie.
Now, we're going to talk food as in produce to start with, and what inspired you as a young boy to become a chef?
What inspired me for a young boy to be a chef was probably the first job I worked in. Actually, when I was about 14.
14?
I think I was about 14. I was pretty young.
Where were you?
Too young. Too young.
Not at all. No, we should start from young. Where were you?
So I was working at a little pizza and pasta restaurant in Coolangatta.
Ocean? No.
It's called Earth and Sea.
Earth and Sea. It's still there.
No, well, it used to be up, further up on, in the, it used to be called Showcase.
Yep.
Back in like the 90s, early 2000s, and then it changed over to the Strand.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool little family restaurant. Booth seating everywhere, checkerboard tablecloths.
Bring that back.
Yeah, it was amazing. It had
affordable
print. lots of photos from all the staff. We used to call them tip trips.
Yeah.
When we'd go every year away somewhere and come back with all these photos, and they'd be all over the wall of the restaurant. Just had that really big sort of pizza and pasta family restaurant vibe where someone drops the coins in the tip jar, they ring the bell, and the whole all the staff go hooray, and really, really cool place.
And so you were watching all of this from what, behind the scenes as a dishy, or what were you doing?
Yeah, I started off washing dishes, and then got promoted to jumping in the pizza section, which was really cool. And I think By that stage, I think it's the whole making the dough and sort of putting toppings on the pizza and cooking it, and I think my mind started opening up, and there's like this whole creative side to food that I had no idea about.
That's interesting you say that, because when I interview chefs, they always give me an inspiration from when they were younger, whether it's watching Nonna cooking or Mum making a stew. There's always somebody that inspired them in the kitchen, because not everybody would be looking at that dough and thinking, I want to be a chef. What do you think it was about, you just mentioned creativity, was that something that inspired you to be a chef?
Yeah, for sure. I believe that as a chef, can speak on a lot of other chefs. It's one of the most creative industries anyone can work in.
Yeah.
But just being open up to being open to that side of things and seeing it, and I think it's like that. It might be that form of to create whilst being under pressure too. It's just something something that's very, I don't know, it's just different.
It's adrenaline, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess the next part of that is, were you starting to question, because you are in a natural food bowl here of organic, volcanic soil, were you starting to question where did the food come from?
Oh, not so much at that age. When I was young, I was just more fascinated by just how the way food is created to make it on the plate. Mm. My education for the food bowl of the area is probably something that came later on. And also just sort of growing up in places like Moolumbar and seeing, just being surrounded by sugarcane fields and
bananas.
Yeah. Since I was a kid, we would go out to near Bucks Farm to the Chillingham General Store, and Bucks Farm would be selling frozen bananas, chalk-coated bananas, and sort of growing up with mango trees in the backyard.
Mm. Avocado world.
exactly, avocado world, and definitely open up to the whole subtropic side of where we come from. And it's weird, you don't actually, so I don't want to go off topic here, but you don't realize that you're attached to that stuff until, you know, when you move away and work in other cities, and you see things like something might pop up, like being in somewhere in Melbourne, you see some mangoes come up or avocados come up, straight away you think, oh, that's home, or you saw
it rubs off, doesn't it? It really does. Like I think about that with our own children growing up here. They probably pass the sugarcane, go to the Moolmar farmers markets and not really think much about it until they go away. One of them's living in Canada at the moment, and I'm sure he's thinking about, oh, where's the tropical fruits, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when you started to really think about chefing as a profession, and you left working at as the pizza boy, where did you go to after that?
So after that, when I started realizing started realizing food is cooking is what I wanted to get into, I decided to start going to TAFE first before I started. I wanted to do an apprenticeship. I wanted to do the proper training, and so I didn't have a job at that stage, so I decided just to enroll into TAFE in Kingscliff, and I just started doing studying there before I actually got myself a job. And not long after that, I got I did a Christmas, sort of a Christmas trial thing at Jupiter's Casino, which is now called the Star. And it was a thing where they sort of get a bunch of Christmas casual cooks and turn them into apprentices after Christmas time. And they kind of
You would have been doing big events and big numbers there.
Yeah, it was an eye opener working in hotels.
Thrown in the deep end.
Yeah, big time deep. I was working in a restaurant called Spinners, and I was doing I think about 2,000 covers a night.
You're just kidding.
Yeah, just that wild sort of big numbers. And
are we talking 90s?
That would have been 2003.
Sorry, mate, you're a lot younger than that. Rude. And then where did you go from Jupiter's?
So from Jupiter's, I went to came back to Tweed, because I was quite young then too. I was getting the bus back and forth. And I figured I wasn't old enough to get my license yet, so I'll get a job a bit closer to home. And I went to Twin Towns RSL, so I ended up staying there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Finished your apprenticeship there?
After that, I went to Salt Bar and Bistro in Kingscliff.
Well, and that would have just been newly opened then?
Yeah, just opened. And it was, I went there because there was all the locals were talking about it. It was the new place, and they're doing great food. And I think I was always, still am to this day, I'm always keen to learn new things and new techniques. And from that age, I was like, oh, I'm working at RSL, and there's not much more I can really learn here than chopping up half roasts and doing crispy potatoes and lamb's fry and bacon. I need to move on to something that's maybe a little bit more, up to date with cooking.
The natural progression for you would have been to go overseas after that, I imagine.
Yes.
Right, is that what you did?
Where did
you head to?
Went to London.
Right, straight to London.
Did
you have your eye on something when you landed in London?
At the start, I was like, oh, go work with someone like Jamie Oliver, because that was just a cookbook my auntie got me.
But I could imagine you working with Jamie Oliver. That would have worked.
So that's, but then I started hearing about his chef, this swear bear angry chef Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, right. You thought you'd really put yourself in the fire.
I figured he was, when I got over there, I started realizing at that time, what was it, the end of 2006? Around 2006, 2007.
Well, that's when his career was really taking off.
Yeah, it's driving. And at that time, like in London, Gordon Ramsay was opening restaurants everywhere, but these restaurants were restaurants everyone wants to eat at.
And probably work at.
So I started working in a little restaurant just in a theatre, just in Hammersmith in London. I applied for a job with Gordon Ramsay Holdings at that time and sort of sent my resume through. And I got a phone call to come and do an interview and stuff. And
what was that day like for you?
It was nerve-wracking because my resume I put through was so bad. Probably had spelling mistakes. probably none of it made sense. But I'm like, they contacted me. That's cool.
Yeah, so, yeah. That would have been a buzz day for sure.
Yeah. So,
isn't that interesting when you go to London? I had something similar happen when I arrived in London. My name was Kylie. Kylie Minogue was huge. I'd studied archaeology at uni, which is, don't even worry why I did that. I was always going to be a journalist. But I arrived in London with a name like Kylie in the 90s. And that was just opening doors, that alone. And you just have this, I don't know if it's a bravado or a false sense of security, but there's something about arriving in London and going, right, I'm going to work there. So I ended up working at the Royal Albert Hall. Because yeah, I was right. Like, oh, the Beatles had played there. Like, it's kind of a similar thing that you go, I'm going to work with Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
And because you're away from home, it just works. Do you reckon?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It's a big thing. Like,
boy from Moolambar goes over, works for Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, like personally, yeah, like just sort of getting over there and being in this big city, first time living away, you know, moving out of home.
And you were like early 20s here? Or?
19,
wow.
19, yeah. So I was super, super young. I would say probably too young to be working in those kitchens as well.
Yeah. Tell me about it. What was it like?
Oh, just tough kitchens. Big days.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
Not so much that. More like a clinic.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Quite hardcore.
Hardcore. Yeah. Big days.
Were you working with Gordon at all?
Didn't work with him. He did used to come in, and there was a few times he would come in.
Did you all shit yourself when he walked in?
Yeah, he's pretty intimidating. one of the times he came in was after we got a bad review from the Evening Standard.
Oh, the biggest Sunday paper out there.
Yeah, and it's the critic. I forgot the critic's name. The critic said something like the lamb Barnsley chop tasted weird, and that was a grilled lamb chop that had anchovy butter. But they
sounds great.
She
doesn't like anchovies.
So that next day, Gordon came in and he walked straight onto the sauce section where I actually worked, and sort of like, all right, cook me up a lamb chop, and cooked the lamb chop, and he was happy with it, luckily. But yeah, that's, you can imagine the cooking process while he's standing there watching you do it is pretty
intense, intimidating to say the least. And what do you think you learnt from that kitchen? What did you take away from there?
How to cook properly.
Wow. Like a French school almost.
Yeah.
Right. You know, learning, not just throwing learning. Ingredients together, actually finessing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it's that basic, those basic foundations to cooking, the basics in terms of like something as simple as cooking a duck breast.
Mm.
Like, I'm not cooking a duck breast in Tweed in those times. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of those.
Yeah.
Techniques or skill. All I had was a ticket to say I'm a qualified chef.
Yes,
and
yes.
There's so much more beyond that.
There's a reason why they say you can tell a restaurant's quality by the way they cook duck.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean by that?
Okay, yeah.
So that's obviously what you were learning there, how to really...
Learning working with seasons as well. I remember blew my mind away just working through winter, and we're getting squabs, pigeons in, and I've got them on the meat board, and the first job I'm doing is shaking them to make sure there's no pellets in there from when they got shot.
Oh, shit.
So just learning really the rawness behind cooking, and like I'm seeing a lot more than just like packaged proteins and like taking it out of a packet and then cooking it. I'm seeing the process of the lot. Which all chefs should experience, and that's what...
And that's interesting about that. You're in a metropolis. You're in the middle of London.
Yeah.
And you're still getting that real farm experience, right? Which we should be able to do all over the world, particularly in Australia.
Yeah, that's totally, and that's what opened my mind up, because I did not know that this sort of stuff exists until I went over there, and I'm sort of lucky enough to be able to see that and working with, seeing guys coming in with... wild mushrooms that's come from France, and you know, truffles, and all these incredible ingredients, but also too with the strong history of food culture over there, people that have been serving have been eating this forever, and so it's part of the culture to be eating wild forage mushrooms and having wild shot game and that sort of stuff.
That's what I love about Europe. You know, you think about all the different countries in one continent, and they all have their levels of history passed down. We're such a young country in Australia.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring you would know this guy, but a mate of ours who has Jonas, who has wild venison.
Yep.
Fair game. So it took him to come from New Zealand across to Australia. And I was a bit embarrassed when I interviewed him actually and found this out, because I'm like, oh, I thought kangaroo was our main pest or vibe or whatever you want to call it. And he's like, no, deer is this country's biggest pest. And then he explained to me that, you know, once he worked out that the deer were getting shot for farming reasons and left on the side of the road, he was just so perturbed by that, because in New Zealand they were so far ahead of utilizing that animal from nose to tail. And he went through so many hoops to get that in Australia passed, even though these animals are laying on the side of the farm not being used. And I just thought, oh my God, this guy's onto something here, and now he's doing salumi with it and blah, blah, blah. So is that something that you're really passionate about as well, when you meet someone that really is utilizing the beast like you're talking about in England?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you just brought Jonas up. We get quite a bit off.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Through Jonas.
Yeah.
It's great. The restaurant's gotten up to, we're nearly one now, and lately I've had three different venison dishes on the menu.
Yeah.
And it's great. And it's nice to be able to work with someone like Jonas from Fair Game. And
he's
partner as well. Both those guys are extremely creative and passionate guys that really give a shit about the wild venison, and we're so lucky to have access to that now.
I agree.
There's not only access to it, but access from fresh venison. It's not, I think for years I've been using venison that's just frozen.
Mm.
We're finally getting something that's a fresh product. And not only that, their creativity behind it as well is really like Jonas's, you know, we're sharing ideas of dishes all the time. We're talking about, oh, what are you doing with all the bone marrow from the venison? Where's that going? Oh, I'm making smoked bone marrow butter. I'm like, oh my God, that's absolutely genius. Like, it's beyond just the venison.
It's also sustainable, isn't it? You know, like if he's actually dealing with a pest problem per se in Australia, and he's making it a sustainable option for chefs, but he's also willing to just rock up, talk to you about all of that, and then collaborate with companies like Salumi and create Bang and charcuterie products. He's definitely thought about it, and I'd like to see more of that done in Australia. Do you have any other good examples of that, of produce that you're using on that level? Like, you talked about wild mushrooms. Surely we've got some banging mushrooms around this area.
Yeah, we were using not wild mushrooms, but I was working with Early Up Farm for a minute, which sadly are not running anymore, but hopefully they'll be coming back at some point.
Yep.
But so more so working with lion's mane mushrooms, and those guys were doing incredible stuff.
So they have health properties in them. So you're cooking with stuff that actually gives us benefits.
Absolutely. It's like venison too.
Yeah.
Same thing, like all this stuff, the digestion and health properties these ingredients have, and they're also delicious.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying we're a health restaurant, but it's good to be using good ingredients, because it's as a cook, like, you want to think about how not only food tastes, but how it's...
Well, you should be.
Yeah.
I think there's been a few that miss it along the way. Mm. Before I head into downtown Cooley, where we are today, you ended up in Melbourne for a stint after you came back from London.
Yep.
What were you thinking when you moved to Melbourne and not back to the Tweed? You were just wanting to still educate yourself in food?
For sure. Well, I actually originally moved to Melbourne because I got had a job lined up with The Maze by Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was in the casino there, so that's sort of what brought me to Melbourne at start. I've always been interested in that city. It's a European style city, and it gets cold. It's got a lot of similarities to like back living in London. I was still so fresh from moving back. So I went there, I was went to Melbourne sort of planning to maybe stay there for 12 months, help set up the restaurant there and be part of the start crew, because I've worked with sort of some people from London, so there's a bit of a connection there. And then I'm staying there for 12 years.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, you grew up in Melbourne.
Stayed there from, the age of 21. Yeah, so.
I think that's actually how I found you, because I've just done a whole lot of, probably four podcasts on Melbourne. And starting with Guy Grossi, who's made the transition as well into Brisbane. And then I dug deeper and went, oh, I've got to go down and see Guy and, you know, go back to his roots of Grilled and Florentine, and went to Pellegrini's, went around to the European, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just love that about Melbourne. It's just a real little Italy that's been there for like decades. It's not pretending to be anything other than what it is. So what do you think it was about Melbourne that kept you there for 12 years, and what did you learn?
What did I learn? I think Melbourne probably shaped me up a bit more as a chef, and understanding of the different cultures that are driven around food, and then spending lots of time in all the different suburbs and learning about different communities, and from being in Footscray to being in Coburg.
Vietnamese in Abbotsford, it goes on, doesn't it?
It goes on, and meeting incredible people on the way as well, and learning from that side of things.
Did you say you worked with Guy for a little while?
No, I didn't, no.
That would have been a nice time.
But, definitely that side of things, definitely. I learned a lot, and I believe all those years spending in Melbourne has definitely shaped me up to be where I am, which is really cool.
And so, I mean, 12 years is almost like you're going to stay there. It's a good innings. What was it that made, other than family and friends and growing up here and coming back to your roots, what was it that really pulled you back to this region in the Northern Rivers?
It's, I think, towards the end, the last couple of years before I left, I started sort of thinking back home again. Obviously, family is the main thing, but also just knowing that this area, it's a food that comes from here as well. Like, I mean, food's always going to drag me everywhere I go, and I know that being here, it's what I'm working with here is something that I've been wanting to do for so long, but just knowing when to.
Yeah, because different landscape, you know, 90s, early 2000s, as I said to you, when I first moved up here 21 years ago, people, when I was in Bondi, Melbourne, London, whatever, and they were saying, oh, you're moving to the cultural desert, that's how it was described, and which was, I feel a bit ashamed of that now because of the sophistication that has happened on the Gold Coast, but at the time it was pretty hard to, you know, find a good coffee. But see, that's grown up, and a lot of people aren't leaving now. Like, young guys and girls like yourself are staying home and actually appreciating the landscape for what it is, whereas before there was a lot of surf clubs and like big clubs that you worked in as well, and you just took off to learn more. But I think what's happening now is that you're understanding, or we're understanding, the food bowl that surrounds us, the culture, the indigenous culture, but also that, you know, there's another market for people that want to eat really good locally sourced food and venison and drink natural wine. Is that what you're noticing up here more, the resurgence of all those things?
Yeah, for sure. There's more people opening lots of exciting projects and surrounding themselves around working with good producers and stuff, which is really exciting. But it's funny as well, like, there's still great restaurants here, especially the Gold Coast, that have been going for 15 odd years, which is great as well. And so I might be going a bit off topic here, but the Gold Coast has always had its own thing going on.
Yeah.
I remember when I was working at Salt, and then I'd go work up in Surfers Paradise in the Q1 just to sort of get some experience working in this place called Absinthe in the Q1, just kind of like staging, really. But there's always been like these great little arcade Japanese restaurants.
Yes, correct. And they're still there.
And they're all still there, and it's really cool to come back here and like experience that again. And like, because I feel the Gold Coast has really got its own thing going on, yeah. And it always has had that, and yeah. That's what's makes it really cool. Handing in terms of the produce of the area, I feel like more venues are connecting to that and taking that on board as well too, which is really cool.
And there's also a community of chefs, you know, you guys are, yeah. You talk about produce, you know, what are you using, what's on the menu, you know, there's not that competitive nature per se, it's more of like a collaboration I'm finding around here. I mean, I found you through, you know, Jay down at Paper Daisy, Chef Jay Barrett, and he's like, oh, you should check out Nick's food, you know, so there's more of that, you know, talk around food and chefs being artists and what they're producing. So what made you choose Coolangatta in an arcade? Let's paint the picture here first. Okay, so there's a Mexican restaurant across the road that I have frequented a couple of decades ago. It's been there a long time. There's a Thai restaurant that always gets rave reviews. There's another place called Basque around the corner, which is kind of like that Mediterranean style that I did some PR for. So we're in that arcade that faces onto the ocean. Have you got ocean views here?
Kind of.
Nice.
If you sit outside, you can see, yeah.
In a Barceloneta kind of way.
We're pretty much cross road. we're cross road from the beach.
And kind of like a sort of a smoky dark hues fit out with your timber blinds and booths. You know, it's. I don't feel like I'm in. I'm not choosing my words here because it's my own podcast. I don't feel like I'm in the green and gold or the yellow blue kind of restaurant vibe that I'm used to in Coolangatta. I'm in a new look Coolangatta. Would that be right?
Yeah, I mean, if that's how you see it, yeah, great. I like hearing what people have to say and the way they look at it. So that's yeah. It's, I like to think, but you know, we've got our own little thing going on, and sort of, yeah, it's good. And I think with the question with Coolangatta, I think I used to work here when I was younger. Sort of attached to town. Spent a lot of time here as a grommet. With my family, through to surf clubs and all that, and I think the town's carried a lot of. I mean, it hasn't been the happiest of towns.
Have you been
growing up as a kid?
It's
had a lot of.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
It's had a lot of. Sorry.
No. Keep going. I think we're on the same path here.
Yeah, it's like I think as a kid, like. I used to see a lot of violence here when I was young.
We weren't heading on the same path here.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking of Snake Pit or whatever it's called, and you know, it used to be called something else.
Rattlesnake, yeah,
and there was,
yeah.
What was that called back in the day?
Baja,
then there was another name of that beforehand. It goes way back.
Yeah.
But you know, having boys that have grown up, this was their place to come out, you know?
Mm.
Not come out. This was their place to, you know, come to a nightclub. And I used to worry as a mum, that's only like 5 years ago, so
yeah.
You know, that's a long history of kind of being concerned of the nightlife and the violence.
It has had it's had a long history. I remember like when I was, my brother and myself, we've seen a lot in this town from kids, and it's like, as much as like that's everywhere, no matter where you are, these things happen, but it's, I believe that
it deserves better. I think it deserves to be better than that.
It does deserve to be better than that, and it's, I believe that the culture of hospitality is something that changes that too.
100%.
I remember when I was a kid working at the pizza joint, Earth and Sea, I mean, all of a sudden I was in there dealing with, instead of dealing with like pressure of things that happen on the streets, I was in there dealing with pressure of being in the kitchen and working nights and being part of that kind of hospitality culture. And it's like, I guess you think back now, I'm here with my own establishment. I think like if I was that 14-year-old kid, like it's a safe place. It's a safe place that can sort of, people, the next generation, have somewhere to go and work and to learn and to sort of be part of something that's in the night time, and it's like you're still getting home late, but you're sort of at work. I don't know. That's exactly what
is what I would want for my children when they're going out in Coolangatta. Because I used to have a saying that nothing good happens after midnight in Coolangatta. I'm coming to pick you up. And there's many times I'd come in my pajamas and pick them up because they were heading in certain directions, you know. And I used to just, as a mum, it used to really concern me because, you know, I actually had a close friend whose son was king hit and is now in a wheelchair, you know. Like, it goes, and it was around the corner here. So, as when I said before, it deserves more than that. This environment deserves more. The people deserve more. Like, you know, it does start with culture, aka hospitality. It starts with people understanding that you can come to a bar and have a few beers or whatever and walk out and you're safe to go home. Like, that's where it all starts.
Yeah, everyone deserves to be safe. No one should have to be... This town shouldn't be... I mean, when we were opening this place, quite a few people said to me, oh, what are you doing that for? Why are you opening a place in Coolangatta? Coolangatta's ghetto. Mm. Or Coolangatta's this, Coolangatta's that. I'm like, I get people saying that, but it's actually, there's a whole side of Coolangatta that people are starting to see now. And it's like, I feel like that conversation is becoming less and less and less now. And especially when you look at you look what's happening in the nightlife of this area, there's some incredible little venues open up around here, from
like our friend Clay Cantina,
Frank Jr.'s Pizza, Francie's Pizza, which was there before, which is one of the greatest pizza joints of all time. Same as
Galura around the corner,
Radicchi Pasta Bar,
Galura,
Eddie's Grubhouse,
yeah.
So there's that you know, and the Eddie's Grubhouse guys,
Bread and Butter, they've been there for a long time too, you know.
Yeah,
and it's paying homage to that too, and you know, respecting that. You know, this is a beautiful coastal town.
Yeah.
It had a dark history, you know, in debauchery and drunkenness. Hello, Australian culture. But it's time to move forward, you know. Yeah. So it actually makes me even feel more at home in your space because of the reason why you have opened it. Not only your skill set and the fact that you're from here. Saying what you did just then makes me think that you're really passionate about the move forward of this gorgeous town.
For sure, and always sort of, always get behind this little town because it's a beautiful place. We're surrounded by amazing beaches, a great community of people who live here too, and we've got access to everything here from the Gold Coast to the Northern Rivers, from the produce that comes from...
The ocean out the front.
out the front. Literally. From all the farmers markets in the areas, well, not in Coolangatta, but like in the outer areas of people crossing over the border and stuff. So it's
I don't know if you knew this, but when I was working my time at Destination Tweed, we were working with Delicious Magazine for the Produce Awards, and I think it was the year that Wild Venison also won. But the Gold Coast hinterland and the Tweed was a joint winner of the best regional destination that year, which was in 2021. And it was the collaboration between the same landscape of the Green Caldera. And we won that award for the best regional destination in Australia for produce.
Right.
Yeah, so things like that are really starting to, you know, happen on a national level as well, which helps what you're doing here. So you could have, like, opened up in Bangalore or somewhere like that. You were working with the crew down there, but you just thought, no, I'm a Coolangatta boy, I'm coming back.
Yeah, it's home. It's home for me.
Yeah, and how's it been for the last year? Like, talk me through Bar Evelyn. It's just such a beautiful, homely feeling here. And I had a look at your menu, which is banging and good price point. You can tell it's local, and your wine list. So how's it been for you?
It's been really good. It's the first year of opening, so it's always the most challenging. But out of all the challenges, it's starting to turn into a little establishment that's where my business partner Mark, we're super proud of. And
is great Mark little... from around here as well? What's Mark's story?
So Mark's originally from New Zealand.
Yeah.
But we both have worked together, I mean, business partners together for quite a while now. We did a couple of venues in Melbourne together.
Oh, great, okay.
For the past I think 8 years we've been working closely together, and Mark's wife Kelly is one of my dear friends as well, and we actually went to school together. So right. Mark's wife is from Tweed as well, and the timing all just worked quite perfectly. They were moving back and we sort of decided, all right, let's give Coolie a crack.
Yeah,
let's
right.
let's find somewhere and just do it. And that's what we did. We opened this place with zero idea of actually what we wanted to do. We wanted to just open the doors and be like, all right, let's take this. We're in a sort of area that we don't really know what people, I guess, want or want to be part of. We just wanted to open the doors and sort of get cooking, get pouring drinks, and sort of take it as it goes. And yeah, that's what we've done, and it's shaped into what we have now. And yeah, we're super.
Did you
super.
Guys do the fit out?
We both did the big part of the design element, and then we had help from our good friend Adrian Henderson, who's a amazing, incredible local builder. So he did like all the finishes.
Well, it's really soft timber veneer walls, and I've noticed up here that's like an air conditioning flute or something, isn't it? You've painted it and made.
How
good is that?
Yeah, the aircon.
Nothing like a bit of copper tones to make things look better.
Yeah, but all this work is. Adrian and another one of our good friends, Vinny, who helped with the build as well, did it, and he's super talented, and it's funny, once it's like moving to a new house, the smell of fresh paint goes away, and when the place is getting a bit more lived in and a bit more seasoned, it's getting that now. It's sort of,
I feel like there's, I'm channeling the stories, and the when I look at the bar stools, there's many a tale that's been told there already.
Yeah,
over a few wines.
Yeah.
I'm trying to coerce my audience out there, Nick, to open something in Kingscliff. This is exactly what I need, a bike ride away, mate. I mean, I can drive, I have only a couple of natural wines, but this is exactly what Coolangatta deserves and needed, 100%. And tell me about your menu and what you like to create. What is it that, like, Nick, you know, it strikes me as you change the menu weekly and you'd have a special menu every time you open the doors because of your creative prowess. But what is it that you like to eat and present as a staple in this restaurant or bar?
Well, the first thing is pizza and pasta.
What you learnt down the road?
Yeah,
you've gone full circle, my friend.
20 years later, I'm doing where it all started.
Isn't that a classic?
So I think pizza and pasta is like it's almost like the discipline boss of the sort of the food, the menu.
Yeah.
So like
What would you put on a pizza? Like, what's different to your pizza than what I would get down the road, toppings wise?
I think just local, I guess, local good ingredients, simple but a little bit different. I don't know, it's really, I struggle to explain.
Okay, I'll do it. Can I do it for you?
Yeah.
Because I just saw it. Kimchi and pineapple.
Oh.
Okay, so ham and pineapple pizzas, I don't care what anyone says about them. Some chefs are so adamant about not putting pineapple on a pizza. It's like, if you go to Italy, they're like, it's blasphemy, right? But you have created something that is absolutely my palate, because I love pineapple on a pizza. Mm. I'm imagining your sourdough pizzas have been birthing for a couple of days as well, the dough. So they're all good stuff. You're putting kimchi with pineapple on a pizza. I don't like ham. I can't eat pork. So explain to me how that came about, for example.
I think the kimchi came from, we just get projects on the go here. We ferment things and as soon as they're ready, it's like, oh, the kimchi's ready, let's do something like that. And I was, but once again, it comes from the producers, Palissa Anderson from Boonlock Farms.
Yes,
got
yes.
Wombok. I'm like, yeah. Well, I was taught how to make kimchi by a bit of a Korean legend many years ago. So I always want to take things that I've been taught from other people and lay it onto menus. And that's where like the kimchi comes from. And then the pineapple pizza. That was just a special. It's not something that's on the menu, but it's like, the projects we have on the go, we take that and we make some fun little specials out of it. And yeah, so I did a week of kimchi and pineapple pizza, and it was...
Mate, if you see me walk through the door, you better get that kimchi and pineapple pizza back on the menu. So that's where the magic happens, Nick. Like, we've come full circle for you chronologically as well. You're back where you started. But you also spoke in the first few minutes of when you were 14, of seeing the creativity behind being a chef. You're living that now. Do you still feel like it's not just a grinding business, it's you coming in as Nick, the artist, per se?
I just love food. Just love it. Just love cooking. I'm so, as I was saying before, I'm so fascinated by what you can do with food, and it's limitless, especially up here with the ingredients we're getting to work with. So don't get me wrong, some days
it's a
tough slog, but I think it's the giving, like cooking food and sort of giving someone an experience and taking someone from the outside world, the chaos of the outside world, and letting food, something you put on a plate, take someone's mind off the reality of anything else is happening. I think that's the other side of it that makes the job, makes it, you want to keep doing it well.
That's a really nice way to describe it. So do you get out of the kitchen and cruise around the bar and chat to peeps?
Not when I'm in the middle of service. I always go into a bit of a
zone.
Tunnel vision.
But chefs like that zone. When I was, that one time I owned a restaurant, I kept finding myself in the kitchen hanging out with the crew. So I was like, oh man, it's so much better in here.
Yeah,
and then I worked out why you're all there.
Yeah, there's definitely the kitchen dynamic is always a bit different to what happens in the bar on the floor. Like in the kitchen, it's about like, there's four walls, even though there's not four walls, we're a bit more open plan here, but like we're looking at food and pans and cooking and stuff and not talking to have any social interaction,
human interaction
just with ourselves. So we all just become these kind of,
you're in the zone,
these
man.
Weirdos in a zone, whereas like people out on the floor are talking to people and getting that social thing. So it's always going to be
we always
got our own little thing going on out there, but it's good. It's what makes it great.
So the bar, Evelyn, is open from Wednesday to Sunday?
Wednesday to Saturday at the moment. Yep. We're actually in the process now of opening up more, especially coming into summer, and just to sort of spread the load through the week.
Yeah.
So at the moment, Wednesday to Saturday, but we'll be definitely opening up a few more days soon as well. Yeah.
And so I always end my podcast, and I don't know if I told you this, I usually don't, I do it deliberately, with who and where inspires you. So my podcast is People to Place. So a person, Mother Earth, doesn't matter, and a place that inspires you. Is that too much for me to put you on the spot today?
A person and a place that inspires me. Yeah, you put me on the spot there.
It's a tough one. I do it deliberately. But I feel like you've already talked about that in the podcast. Like, you've mentioned that the place is where you've grown up. I feel like this is where your inspiration is coming from at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's probably what, yeah.
And someone, sure. I'm not trying to take the words out of your mouth here, but someone that did inspire you would have been Gordon Ramsay, in the sense of what you learnt from his restaurants. I don't know if he inspired you or like threatened you, but is there someone throughout or someone in your life at the moment that really inspires you to keep going and doing what you do right now? That's work for me. No, it's meant to be. We're meant to be organic on this. It's just like...
No, I just don't. My brain's a bit frazzled. I can't think of what's...
Yeah, you've just come off a big week, my friend. Yeah. I actually feel like, I mean, it's I've done that on so many podcasts now that I'm not going to get rid of it, but I feel like for you, it's this region is inspiring for you. And I think also like the journey that you've been on as a chef, you've had so many different encounters throughout that time, from Star Casino right through to Ramsay to Melbourne back to here. I find your journey really inspiring, so I can answer that question for you. You inspire me by opening up a place of this caliber in downtown Coolangatta. It makes me excited to see what the future of Coolangatta looks like, the southern end, so much so that I just pitched a story that somebody said they wanted. So that inspires me. Does that help you?
Yeah, I think the, like, this the people I get to work with every day inspire me from, you know, the guys at Woodland Valley, the
great guys
working with Palissa at Boonluck Farm, working with the Atkin family at Jumping Red Ant, working...
That's right, John. We talked about him.
John Atkin, like, you know, working with these people, they inspire me because I get the opportunity to be talking to the fishers of, like, Flemo, Daniel Fleming, local.
Oh my God, you've got so many people that inspire you now.
Local fishermen.
I just had to give you a minute.
I know. You have me on the spot, and now I'm back. But yeah, those, the people that I'm getting the food off are the ones that inspire me.
That's a great answer.
Because that's what, it's not, you get to learn because there's so much more, there's so much behind the scenes that it takes to put food on a plate, to go onto a table and for a guest to eat. There's like the pressure of a fisherman that's got to go out in swell, or the local, the Dave Smith who nets the mullet down at Fingal. He could have like several, in the mullet season, he could have several days with heat where he can't get any mullet. He's got to sit around for 18 hours a day just waiting for the school of mullet to come through. So when you go and get that mullet off him, you're like, I just want to do, this guy inspires me, I want to do him proud of what I put on the plate. I think that's where I'm at.
I like that. I really like that, Nick. No, that makes me want to eat your food even more because you understand the process and you're not just throwing something on a plate and charging a shitload of money for it. So, I can't wait for you to open. Are you sure you're not open today?
Maybe I'll just put the stoves on now. We'll just have a little cook up.
Yeah, let's do that, my friend. Really lovely talking with you today, and being in this space feels really comfortable, feels lived in, styled. And I'm really excited to come back here one day. So thanks for your time today, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Kylie. Appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. Ciao, ciao.